It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have mostly cloudy skies. It's 53 degrees. The humidity is down to 80%. Out at the airport, they are also registering northeast winds to 7 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is just calling for a 30% chance of rain for the rest of the day, a 20% chance of rain tonight, and just a chance of rain tomorrow, followed by a chance of showers. Mostly cloudy skies throughout the period with light southeast winds. Temperatures with highs in the low 50s and overnight lows in the mid 40s. Coming up in the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough School District has gone back through its budget after Governor Mike Dunleavy slashed education funding. And it's going on now, the Trawl Survey. Find out what that is after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Supreme Court's out with major decisions in cases rolling back affirmative action and advancing religious protections. Details coming up first, but an emotional conclusion today first in the trial of Scott Peterson, the former school resource officer who was accused of abandoning the students and faculty of a Parkland, Florida high school when it came under attack several years ago.
Verdict, count one. We, the jury, find as follows as to the defendant in this case. The defendant is not guilty. So say we all this 29th day of June 2023 at Fort Lauderdale, Broward County, Florida. Verdict, count two.
And so it went for the following 10 counts, of which Peterson was also found not guilty for his actions when a gunman went on a shooting rampage in 2018 at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. As the verdict was read, Peterson broke down in tears and hugged his attorney, while the parents of victims who were among the students and faculty killed or injured in the massacre shook their heads in apparent disbelief. In a decision being felt at colleges and universities nationwide, a divided Supreme Court has decided to gut affirmative action. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports President Biden strongly rejected today's ruling and is now directing the Department of Education to look into what practices can help build more diverse student bodies.
In remarks from the White House, Biden called the court's decision a severe disappointment, but he says it can't be a permanent setback.
I believe our colleges are stronger when they are racially diverse. Our nation is stronger.
Biden says his message for the country's colleges is that schools should take into account the adversity students have to overcome in their admissions process. The Supreme Court's 6-3 decision, which upends decades of precedent in academic admissions, was split on partisan lines. Biden said of the court, quote, "This is not a normal court." Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, the White House.
The decisions against Harvard and the University of North Carolina's admissions policies mark a long-awaited victory for Edward Blum, the conservative legal strategist who've been fighting against race-based affirmative action.
These obligations compel the removal of all racial and ethnic classification boxes from undergraduate and postgraduate application forms.
The Deep South is in for another day of extreme heat. We have more on this from NPR's Debbie Elliott.
The National Weather Service has issued excessive heat warnings for a large stretch of the South from Texas to the Florida Panhandle. The heat index is forecast to be up to 120 degrees in New Orleans and to 115 in Mobile, Alabama and Pensacola, Florida. The high temperatures have prompted cities to open libraries and community centers as cooling stations and are warning people with medical conditions to take special precautions to stay cool.
That's Debbie Elliott reporting. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The The Kodiak Island Borough School District made some hard budget decisions this week after Governor Mike Dunleavy slashed the one-time funding for education approved by the state legislature by half. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, Kodiak's superintendent says the district can only take so many hits like this.
Kodiak's school board approved a new budget on Monday after taking a hit of about $1.8 million from the line item veto. No staff positions are being cut this year, and the district is instead reducing their budget for supplies by about $600,000. Another $500,000 will come out of the district's savings or fund balance, and the rest of the deficit is being spread across maintenance and school activities. Cindy Mika is the school district's superintendent. She says it's a big challenge for schools to avoid layoffs.
80% of our budget is in personnel. And so when you take almost a $2 million cut in state funding, it has to come out of anything that's not personnel related. And so any funds that isn't personnel related took a cut.
Some of the first noticeable changes will take effect when the district sends out school supply lists for parents. The district will also likely charge activity fees for extracurriculars that cost the district money.
We were attempting to put in school supplies that parents wouldn't have to buy school supplies. We've been doing that with CARES money.
The CARES Act gave schools and businesses federal money to stimulate the economy during the pandemic. But with that funding running out and a reduced budget, buying supplies for students is no longer possible. Staff will also have to make do with fewer office supplies as well, and both students and staff will have reduced travel budgets. Mika says maintenance staff are also seeing a huge cut this year. Their budget for contracting tradespeople like plumbers and electricians was reduced by about $250,000. The fund balance is absorbing a large chunk of the deficit this year too, but that money won't last forever. Mika says this could be the last year before the district is forced to look at layoffs and cutting jobs.
It's going to be almost impossible to make further cuts into anything that's not personnel. We have such a tight and slim budget right now, it's going to be really difficult to make it through the school year.
In its new budget, KIBSD will be using about half of what's left in their fund balance, about $2.5 million. If the state doesn't increase funding next year, the district would face a deficit of about $5 million. The school board will begin looking at next year's budget in September. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
A major study of one of the state's largest marine environments is underway. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration conducts bottom trawl surveys to compile fisheries and environmental data across the country. And as KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, this summer the organization is in the process of surveying the Gulf of Alaska.
Scientists survey the Gulf of Alaska every other year. NOAA's bottom trawl survey provides an accounting of the entire marine ecosystem, all the way from the Aleutian chain to southeast Alaska. Ned Lehman is the trawl survey's team lead. He says they're specifically looking at the water column that hovers just above the sea floor.
We basically count and identify everything that we catch and weigh it. And all of those animals, from the fish to the smallest invertebrates, are identified and counted.
Think of it like a computer scanner. NOAA scientists embedded on fishing vessels move west to east, counting the Gulf of Alaska's deepest-dwelling marine creatures, like groundfish and crab. The data is used for stock assessments, which help set catch limits and management policies for specific fisheries. It also provides information for long-term monitoring projects like water temperature. Dr. Lyle Britt is the director of NOAA's division that oversees the survey. He says both the environmental and fisheries data is crucial. One major takeaway from this year's survey, for instance, will be Pacific cod numbers.
No different than the fishermen in this area. I think we're keenly interested to see how Pacific cod are doing after the heat wave and what kind of recovery there may be happening since then.
It used to take a full year to analyze the data, but advances in technology have shortened that turnaround time. Preliminary stock assessment numbers for species are now available within about 3 weeks of completing the survey. But gathering all that data does still take time. The crew left Dutch Harbor in mid-May and stopped in Kodiak over the weekend. Their next stop is in Seward on their way to Ketchikan, where they'll wrap up in August. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy called youth mental health the defining public health challenge of our time at a roundtable in Anchorage on Monday. He was speaking at an event organized by U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan on addressing Alaska's youth mental health crisis. Senator Sullivan said the crisis is severe and profound.
It's the pervasive depression, anxiety, and even focus on suicide of America's youth. And according to one expert, there's never been a generation of young Americans this depressed, this anxious, and this fragile. And of course, the numbers that we've seen, the data that relates to this is shocking.
For teens, Alaska has the highest rates of suicide in the country. American Indian and Alaska Native people are at the greatest risk. In May, the Surgeon General declared loneliness an epidemic in the United States, and he said young people experience even more loneliness than adults. Last month, he also released a report on the harms of social media on youth. He spoke about how it can distort values.
For too many young people, particularly on social media, the information that they're getting is an overload, frankly, of information that drives them to compare themselves constantly to other kids and to chase what I think of as the false gods of success and happiness, which are fame, power, and money.
In 2021, Sullivan argued that Congress should consider time limits on technology for youth. And at the roundtable, he said future legislation could increase the age limit for social media from 13 to 16, though it's unclear just how those limits would be enforced. Both Sullivan and Murthy talked about the importance of accessing data collected by social media companies. Current research shows that people who use social media experience higher risks of depression, anxiety, and addiction, but detailed data could help paint a clearer picture. Sullivan says legislation could force technology companies to release that data.
They're not being transparent with their data, for example. I mean, can you imagine any other company in America saying, you know, sorry, we have data that may or may not show that what we're doing is harming kids, but we're not going to give it to you. Well, I think you're going to see some laws here soon saying, no, damn it, you are going to give it to us.
Sullivan didn't make any clear promises for future legislation or funding. But he said that when one in three girls nationally are considering suicide, nothing else should matter. Use of the opioid reversal drug naloxone is increasing in Alaska. Naloxone is safe and easy to administer, but public health professionals say it's essential to get people to the emergency room after using it. In practice, though, most people aren't calling 911. As Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports, that's concerning to public health experts.
I'm just going to make a little stack and a couple cases of Ultrafines, which is usually our most popular syringe.
Venus Woods is prepping to head out in a mobile needle exchange. She works for Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, or 4AAs. Every week, she takes a white Mercedes van, parks it in the Mountain View neighborhood of Anchorage, and waits. The van has a sliding window, and people come up to it to exchange their used syringes for new ones.
Okay. And do you need any Narcan? Okay. What about fentanyl test strips?
Needle exchanges like this reduce HIV and hepatitis transmission by 50% because people don't share needles as much. The organization also gives out safer drug use supplies like alcohol wipes, tourniquets, and Kloxxado. That's a stronger version of naloxone that can be used to reverse an opioid overdose. Wood says people tell her they're using the overdose kits.
I mostly hear things like, it's amazing, it saves people's lives, I had to use that several times last week.
According to the health department, organizations gave out about 30,000 kits statewide last year. Anyone who gets a kit in Alaska takes a short training. They learn how to use the nasal spray and that they must call 911 afterwards for medical attention. But Wood says, in practice, people aren't calling 911.
You know, I think the majority of our syringe access clients do not utilize emergency rooms.
Woods is in recovery, so also speaks from personal experience. She says people who use drugs are sometimes treated differently by doctors and in hospitals, so they might not want to get medical care. Coleman Cutchins is a clinical pharmacist for the Alaska Department of Health. He says he doesn't want people to avoid care because they fear stigma. He says people go into healthcare to save lives, and he's deeply worried that people aren't getting medical care after an overdose.
I just want to stress, you know, how unsafe it is to not call 911 as soon as one of these happen. You know, anytime somebody gets naloxone, you know, they're trying to save a life. It's wonderful, but the full part of saving that life is give naloxone, start CPR, call 911.
Cutchins says in an opioid overdose, the person forgets to breathe. A reversal drug like Narcan helps by kicking opioids off of the receptors in the brain. But Narcan doesn't last as long as opioids do. He says people should give multiple doses of naloxone while they're waiting for an ambulance, but it's still possible to overdose after getting naloxone.
So there's instances where, you know, someone seems totally fine and then, you know, an hour or so later they go back, you know, or even a few hours later they go back into that respiratory depressed state.
He says even if people survive an overdose, they could have other medical problems, like brain damage from low oxygen.
The quicker that someone can get treatment, the less likely they are to have a long-term injury from it.
Robin Lutz is executive director of 4A's. She says even if it's best practice to call 911 after an overdose, it's not realistic. One reason is that the physical experience of having an overdose reversed is extremely unpleasant.
What we hear from people is that it's a kind of immediate, what we call dope sick, so you just feel like you're in immediate withdrawal, and that's a terrible feeling. It's like the flu times 50.
People may not want to be in an ER environment after that. They may also be worried about arrest. Good Samaritan laws in Alaska protect someone overdosing or helping another person with one.
People know that, I think, on kind of an intellectual level, but I think it's really hard to believe that if you've had previous experience with the criminal justice system, you know, if you've had negative experiences, which, you know, a lot of people who use drugs have, because drug use is illegal.
But Good Samaritan laws only protect people if they stay with someone until they get medical help or the police arrive. Lutz says, however people are using it, naloxone is essential.
People really depend on it and depend on us to make sure they have it so that they can support the people they're using with, so they can support themselves. I can't imagine if our state didn't have access to naloxone right now, what our overdose deaths would look like.
She says their organization gave out 2,500 overdose kits last year. She says at times people were requesting the kits and they didn't have any left to give. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
For the second time this summer, Anchorage officials are clearing out a big swath of public land where a lot of people without homes are camping. There isn't enough shelter space for the soon-to-be-displaced campers, which leaves a large vacant lot at the edge of downtown as a likely space people will resettle. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports that the neighbors are bracing for the encampment to swell again and a third wave of public safety and nuisance issues along with it.
The city posted notices here at the Mountain View Snow Dump and Davis Park across the street a week ago. Crude shelters made of tarps and tents and scavenged materials are among the trees, surrounded by bike parts, wet clothes, blankets, tote bins, shopping carts, and piles of garbage.
So you have any idea what you'll do when they come through to try to clear people out?
Really?
This is a really common response from unsheltered people getting displaced. This time, the military is involved. The encampments being targeted are on properties that the city leases from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, just outside the base's fence line.
And the terms of the lease are that we keep it free of trash and camps.
Mike Braniff is the head of the city's Parks and Recreation Department, which is responsible for cleaning up lots of these unofficial campsites. Braniff says every time the city clears campsites, it's safety-driven. He says the military was patient and understanding, but that changed recently.
And then we learned about a week ago, 10 days ago maybe, that people had been coming and going onto the fenced active portion of the military base, and they expect us to take action.
Base officials were not available to answer questions on tape. In an email, base spokesperson Aaron Eaton did not confirm or deny Braniff's statements. Eaton said the base and city work together on security issues. She said the base plays a role in national security and that base security must respond immediately to trespassing. The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska says it plans to file appeals on behalf of some of the impacted campers. Its lawyers already have appeals pending for three people who were camping on city land in Midtown. The city pushed most campers out of that area ahead of a three-day music festival in mid-June, citing public safety concerns about how the campers and concertgoers might interact. The ACLU thinks both camp clearing actions are illegal in light of a 2018 federal court ruling that says it is unconstitutional to punish homeless people for camping in public spaces when there isn't enough shelter. ACLU spokesperson Megan Barker says the city is just moving the problem without meaningful solutions.
They're just continuing to clear areas and make it even harder for people who don't have resources. We don't really know where they are expected to go.
Rob Couples thinks he does know. The large, city-owned vacant lot along 3rd Avenue, across the street from a block of vacation rental properties he owns. Couples has been very vocal about recurring vandalism, property damage, safety, and quality of life issues he attributes to the encampment. Couples hops down from an excavator. He's running around a small house he's renovating for the business.
I'm doing dirt work around the perimeter of my property in preparation for construction of 350 linear feet of fencing.
On one wall, he scrubbed the wooden siding down to remove a graffiti tag. Several windows are broken. He says someone shot them out recently with a BB gun. He says the fencing is his top priority right now. He's bracing for a third wave of people to come to the neighborhood. The first wave came when the city shut down its winter shelters, the second when the Midtown site was cleared. He walks the encampment regularly, handing out trash bags and trying to build some relationships. He says the number of tents and RVs and cars have ballooned. He used to keep a precise count, but it's too hard to do now. He estimates there are more than 100 tents and 200 people. Mayor Dave Bronson and his senior staff visited the site on Monday. In a video, he announced a cleanup effort.
We're here to remove abandoned cars, tires, garbage. This simply has to be done. The city is not going to turn out to be Seattle or Portland or San Francisco.
Bronson's team intends to increase police patrols and hire a contractor to install a fence around the site. Couples cautiously welcome the mayor's announcement.
My fear is that these things that he intends to implement will not be here in time. Well, I know they won't be. They will not be here in time before this third wave hits East 3rd Avenue.
Couples says down the road, he would consider legal action if there's no improvement. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Military weapons experts will visit Unalaska on Friday to respond to what might be an unexploded device that was found on Unalaska's shore. Fire Chief Ben Knowles responded to the call earlier in the month when a citizen reported a suspicious object.
So a hiker came in and reported what they believed to be was a old unexploded ordnance resembling some sort of landmine, anti-personnel, or other mine.
Knowles said the device
down there on the S-curves.
Knowles said the device is partially submerged in the ground, making it difficult to move without disturbing it.
This is the first time that I've dealt with something that's embedded in the ground, or this close to town. In my experience, we've had several unexploded ordnances over the time period that I've been here on the island, and it's usually like a hand grenade or munitions of some sort, and they're actually physically brought into the station.
The police department couldn't safely deal with the device themselves, so they sent pictures to an expert with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
He said that it could resemble something similar, and so that we should use caution.
Knowles said there is no imminent threat to the public, but advises the community to use caution and stay away from the location. Cones are in place to keep people away from the site, which is near the S-curbs.
We've checked on it fairly frequently. We're heeding the warnings of the EOD and the specialists to stay clear of the area as much as possible until they can get that team down here.
Representatives from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson and the Army Corps of Engineers are scheduled to arrive in Unalaska tomorrow.
Lack of homes for sale means fewer home sales. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
The National Association of Realtors count of pending home sales plunged 2.7% in May compared to the month earlier. Sales surged in the Northeast but fell elsewhere in the country. Compared to a year ago, sales are down 22%. Initial weekly jobless claims had been somewhat elevated, not anymore. The Labor Department says claims fell last week to 239,000. Some economists believe 280,000 is the threshold, which signals significant slowing in the labor market. The Commerce Department made a sizable revision to its measure of economic growth in the first quarter of the year. It's now up to an annualized rate of 2% from a previous estimate of 1.3%. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 29th day of June, the year 2023. 56 degrees in Kodiak under partly cloudy skies. 7 mile per hour winds from the east out at the airport where they are down to 70% humidity and they are showing 10 miles of visibility. Look for the weather conditions you see right now to continue through Saturday with high temperatures in the low to mid 50s, overnight lows in the mid 40s, and just a chance of rain with cloudy skies. Starting Saturday night, though, rain is expected, and that rain is expected to continue through Tuesday or so. East winds increasing to 25 miles per hour Saturday night.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 11, date issued 10 a.m. on June 27th. Cost recovery fisheries are scheduled to begin in Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area at noon Tuesday, June 27th, and the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishery opportunities in the Spearden Bay Special Harvest Area will depend on the ability to meet local aquaculture association needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. The Iqaluit Bay section of the Afognak District will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Wednesday, June 28th. And as previously announced, there will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 27th to 9 p.m. Thursday, June 29th in the following areas. In the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. And the following areas remain open until further notice. The Duck Bay section of the Afognak District and the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse anglers in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251-406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251-822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251-821. Other closed waters are shown of Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Variable winds to 10 knots for today and tonight on our east side. 4-foot seas building to 5 feet tonight. For tomorrow, northeast 15, seas to 4 feet. For Saturday through Sunday, southeast 25 and seas coming up to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today, seas to 1 foot. East 15 tonight with 3-foot seas and northeast 15 tomorrow with 3-foot seas building to 4 feet Friday night. However, on Saturday, look for east winds to 30 knots and seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. There will be a celebration of the life of Dr. Gilbert Bain at the Kodiak College on Saturday, July 8th. That begins at 1 p.m. and will be held in the Benny Benson Building. A potluck will follow, so please bring your favorite dish to share. Again, that's Saturday, July 8th, Benny Benson Building starting at 1 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.